Homage to the Wisdom, homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Good morning. Just as I started that, my eye fell on the word wisdom and I distracted myself. Today we celebrate Nehan, commemorating the death of the Buddha. The end of a life spent in service of truth, in service of the end of suffering. I want to start by reading a story. This is an old story out of the annals of Buddhism. Long ago, in the kingdom of Chu, there lived a farmer named Bianhe. One day, while tilling his vegetable field, he came across a large rock. On looking at it closely, he saw that it was actually a large piece of jade. So sure was Bianhe that the stone was jade, he decided to give it as a gift to the king, Ling. On receiving the gift, the king asked an expert to give his opinion on whether or not the rock was genuine jade. When the expert told the king it was just an ordinary rock, the king had one of Bianhe's legs cut off as punishment. Later, Wu became king, and once again Bianhe offered the stone to the king, saying, "This is a splendid jewel." But King Wu said, "This man is trying to trick me," and had the farmer's other leg cut off. Bianhe was overwhelmed with sadness. Clutching the stone in his hands, he sobbed and sobbed until his tears ran out in drops of blood replaced them. The next king, King Wen, found Bianhe in this state and asked his retainer, "Why does the farmer cry so?" The retainer told him Bianhe's story, and King Wen again summoned an expert to appraise the stone. This time the expert confirmed that the stone was indeed a wonderful jewel. Facing Bianhe, the king asked, "Why do you cry so?" Bianhe replied, "I don't cry because my legs have been cut off, but because prior kings could not recognize that this stone was in fact real jade. I cried out of exasperation at this situation." Thus it was that during the reign of King Wen, Bianhe's stone was first proven to be actually jade. Later, King Zhao, ruler of the kingdom of Qin, attempted to acquire the jade in exchange for 15 castles. Thus the jade became known as Many Castles Jade. So just set that aside for a minute. As the Buddha was dying, he gave some instructions to lay people and monks. And he was saying, "Don't be sad because I die. Don't be distraught. You're fine." One thing he said is, "All conditioned things are impermanent. Work out your own salvation with diligence." At another time he said, "After my death, the Dharma and the discipline which I have taught you will be your master. Let the Dharma be your light. Let it be your refuge. Do not seek any other refuge. Disciples, you should well protect and preserve the doctrine which I advised you to probe. I'm going to reiterate that. The doctrine which I advised you to probe, so that this holy life may take its course and continue for ages to come, for the welfare of many, to console the world, and for the happiness and welfare of heavenly beings and men. From the very beginning, Buddhism has been optimistic. It is marked by optimism, hope, all-inclusive acceptance. Every one of us is a participant in this great matter. Even if you don't identify as a Buddhist, even if you don't identify as a spiritual seeker, you are a participant in this great matter. And every practitioner has the requisites necessary. You have what it takes. In China, these prerequisites were boiled down to one phrase, Buddha nature. This is the idea that Buddha, Bodhi, enlightenment, equanimity, compassion, wisdom, purity, these are not things that get added to you. Not by the teacher, not by the practice, not by your effort, not by magic. These things are already there, constantly present, not separate. Innate. We also refer to this as our true nature, your true nature. In those few moments when we stop feeling fearful and anxious and self-conscious and alienated and disturbed and insecure and stubborn, arrogant, aggressive, in those few moments, Buddha nature shines. Buddhism teaches that practice, meditation, precepts, manners, morals, thoughtfulness, mindfulness, self-reflection, all these things that we work at, these are things that can help reveal that Buddha nature. That Buddhism teaches these things may be a matter of faith. But they do not replace the necessity for probing, for verifying, for looking yourself. The Buddha said to probe the Dharma. He said, investigate thoroughly. He didn't say, this is the doctrine, memorize it, swallow it whole, preach it on corners. He said, check it out. Take it as a good theorem, but don't you dare preach it until you know it for yourself. Part of the offertory that Genko recited today is, it says, after all delusion is removed, that which remains is called the true form, the form of Buddha, all. I'm always struck by that all. Now, I have to confess that there have been some teachers of Buddhism and some sects that come very close to preaching original sin, postulating that our tendency towards greed, hate, and delusion is so deep, you might consider it our deepest nature. That our deepest basic nature is flawed and sinful. And it's hard for me to blame people for getting that pessimistic. I mean, if you read the paper, if you watch the 6 o'clock news, it's very easy to believe that we're a pollution on the face of the earth. And how did we get this way? I don't blame people for getting pessimistic. It is very hard. After all delusion is removed, that which remains is called the true form, the form of Buddha. After all delusion is removed, if you just think about how hard it is to break one bad habit. Just one bad habit. And most people cling to their delusions with vigor. In spite of all that, Zen teaching has persisted in this optimistic view. Buddha nature will shine through whenever it is given a chance. And one of the things I want to add to this is that you give it a chance, your Buddha nature shines through sometimes in spite of yourself. That it's not just a matter of keep practicing for 70 years and maybe you will have a moment of the Buddha nature shining forth. Is there are times when you just accidentally forget to be fearful and angry and afraid and aggressive and all the things that get in the way. And you reach out and touch a child's hand, and your Buddha nature shines forth. You kiss your grandmother on the forehead as she lies in her deathbed, and your Buddha nature shines forth. You see suffering and you reach out to help and your Buddha nature shines forth. So I have another reading for you. This is from the 6th century in China. A teacher named Tao Xin, and he has a work called The Fundamental Expedient Teachings for Calming the Mind Which Attains Enlightenment. And it's not that much shorter in Chinese. He says, when you first begin practicing sitting meditation and viewing the mind, go off by yourself and sit in one place. First, make your body erect and sit correctly. Make your clothes roomy and loosen your belt. Relax your body, loosen your limbs. Massage yourself 7 or 8 times. expel completely the air in your belly. Through the natural flow, you will obtain your true nature, clear and empty of desire, quiet and pure. The body and mind being harmonized, the spirit is able to be peaceful. Then, obscure and mysterious, the inner breath is clear and cool. Slowly, slowly, you collect the mind, and your spiritual path becomes clear and keen, sharp. The state of the mind is lucid and pure. As contemplation becomes increasingly lucid, and inner and outer become empty and pure, the nature of your mind becomes utterly tranquil. The manifestation of the awakened mind is utterly tranquil, just like this. That peacefulness you sometimes touch just sitting in meditation, that peace is your Buddha nature shining forth. Although the nature of your awakened mind has no form, inner constancy always exists. The mysterious spiritual power is never exhausted, but always shines clearly. This is called your Buddha nature. This Buddha nature is Bianhe's jade stone. This is a thing that is so easy to discount. It cannot be seen while one is in duality. But this precious jade is yours to uncover. Calm your mind, calm your body. Allow things to drop away and just see what emerges. That is probing the Dharma. Probe into some dark places. Probe with courage. You may discover pockets of light you didn't know existed. This is part of what we enacted with the ceremony today. Is we are both talking about the death of the teacher. But we are also talking about the apparent disappearance of our true nature. And somebody comes forward and finds the light and brings it forward. If you test the Dharma for yourself, you may be that person who brings the light forward. This is the Buddha's admonition to us. You, me, be the one who brings the light. If you don't do it for anybody else, do it for yourself. But when you have done it for yourself, you will do it for all. That's short, but that's my talk for the day.
Thank you for your talk. I couldn't help but be struck by thoughts that I was having about one thing you said and then something that I saw recently that there's a gentleman named Bob Hare who is a research psychologist, and he came up with a protocol, a test for identifying people who are what are called sociopaths. They kind of, it's maybe 1% of the population. They operate in a different way than the majority of the population. And I saw a film, speaking about the 6 o'clock news, you mentioned the 6 o'clock news. There's a film, I thought it was I was talking about with Gyoshi over here on the way. I thought it was a really brilliant, ferocious satire of the corporate media. And it was specifically, it was talking about the 6 o'clock news and talking about the deliberate manipulation of the news in a certain way. It very much reminded me of folks I know, like my mother, for example. The news plays people like a violin. It deliberately distorts, and this is portrayed in the film, distorts the nature of reality to portray it as a kind of a complete nightmare. Bad things happening around all the time, and it's shown in the film this way. And it also portrays a certain type of individual who thrives on doing that, thrives on deliberately distorting reality. It portrays a particular individual in the film who is basically what I would call, a sociopath, psychopath, in the language of Bob Hare. And that's something that really agitates me, because I can sit on my cushion and I can try to cultivate calm. But at the same time, in the back of my head, I know that there are those, I don't have this pessimistic view that you were talking about. I think that human beings, by and large, want to communicate and be helpful to others. But at the same time, there is a certain segment of the population that doesn't necessarily want to do that, and maybe hardwired to not want to. And in the context of our kind of social and political system, they are their ability to create havoc is amplified, and that results in a lot of problems. So that just agitates me. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
Well, those first two kings that Bianhe went to had the power to create a certain amount of havoc, certainly in his life. I think ugliness has existed long before Buddhism appeared on the scene. If you want to cultivate Buddha nature, if you want to cultivate that clarity and have your Buddha nature shine through, it makes a difference what you plug into your brain and how much time you spend there. I'm not suggesting that you turn yourself into a Pollyanna, but I am suggesting that the more time we spend with pessimists and the more time we spend probing other people's darkness, the more likely we are to move into that pessimistic view, to really give up on that light within. So measure it. Measure how much you can tolerate, and don't overdose yourself. It's my suggestion.
Thank you.
Thank you for your talk. I've been working on finding Buddha nature in relationships with people. And one of the things that came up in your talk was the story that you talked about. And what came to mind was two statements. You know, one is forgive and forget. The other is forgive, but I'll never forget. Mm-hmm. And I was struggling in my meditation with those ideas. You know, is it better to forgive and forget or forgive and not forget, and you know what happens? And then all of a sudden I realized that if you really do find your Buddha nature in that, all that karma will fall away, and you won't need to answer those questions because they won't be there anymore. Am I on the right track?
You're on the right track. In the moment of being your Buddha nature, there is nothing to forgive. There is nothing to forget. There is just clear, open-hearted acceptance. But there's a piece that I left out of Shaoxin's exhortations, where he gets a little overblown about once you see your Buddha nature, then forever you're free of all karma, and you never have a bad thought again. And it's just like, okay, there is a way in which that's true, but the more we as Buddhists say that, the more we delude people. In that moment of being your Buddha nature, yeah, forever, past and future, there is no sin. There is, those psychopaths don't exist. Everything is perfect exactly as it is, and there is nothing to forgive, nothing to forget. 5 minutes later, stuff emerges, and so I think, as a practice issue, I would say that noticing that it is possible to drop the worry about forgiving and forgetting, and just forgiving or just forgetting, that whole issue can drop away, but there are times when you really do need to remember that this particular person probably is a sociopath, and probably if you have dealings with him, it's not going to turn out well. So recognizing that somewhere in there, deeply buried, is a Buddha nature, and so I want to respect that, but I don't want to make myself unduly vulnerable to the other stuff that's not Buddha nature. Does that talk to your question at all? Okay.
I'm going to play Mara's advocate, which is, because I hear this question quite often of basic goodness, and it seems like a little bit of an assumption, and I'm interested in your response. So, not my thoughts, not really my, like, I sometimes a good medicine for me is I am not my thoughts, or I'm not my story, or I'm not, like, this craving to eating delicious pizza.
Can you prove that?
Well, it's a little bit, this basic assumption of goodness is a little bit like a thing that takes a lifetime to prove or disprove. So, walk me through this. How am I basically good?
It's not up to me to prove it to you.
Yeah.
It's for you to test the hypothesis. So are you basically bad?
My answer to this is that I have a tendency, especially this time of the year, due to lack of light and not a lot of vitamin D, to get a little snippy. And so that is it doesn't really feel very good. I have learned a lot about myself in dealing with that, and recently, like in December, just got really tired of the stories I was telling because of lack of light, and I was like, is this really the space that I want to occupy? I've been this place before. And so I would answer that would be my basic goodness answering. And my basically badness is this naturally arising snippiness.
I can't remember what Zen teacher said this. Matsu, maybe. When you speak, that is your Buddha nature speaking. And there is a way in which I can hear what you are saying, and I hear, yes, the Buddha nature is saying, I'm uncomfortable with this snippiness. This is not my best shining forth, and I know better. I can't activate better right this moment, but I know better. And so I would say that you haven't proved that good nature exists, but you've got a strong suspicion right there. So continue to probe and see what you find.
I'm kind of new at all this. I'm not a Zen scholar, to say the least. So this question may be very fundamental, but in the light of equanimity, how is goodness defined and badness defined?
In the light of equanimity. If by goodness we're talking about Buddha nature, I would say that equanimity is an aspect of Buddha nature. It is an aspect of basic goodness. And one of the things that covers it up, that makes it hard to find, is agitation. So whether our agitation is angry and aggressive, or passive and whiny, or fearful and anxious, they're all hiding that light. And when we're in those states, there is no equanimity to be found. Set. Come close.
Maybe I'm not understanding equanimity. If you're not judging, how do you define goodness? What is goodness to Zen Buddhists?
What's that?
If you're accepting everything in life.
Genko has an answer.
Is that good and bad thing? That that's that.
Okay. That's what I'm struggling with.
Okay. So, when one is in dualism, you can't see the Buddha nature. You can't see Bianhe's jade. So as long as we are thinking Genko's a really good person. Fumio, not so much. And Guy, he's just plain evil. As long as I am categorizing people like that, then I am not operating out of and I am not seeing Buddha nature. So I am not in equanimity when I am parsing the world into good and bad people.
Okay, so it's non-judgment of things, but the spirit is to be judged. The things that are happening by maybe the precepts or... How do you define goodness, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Okay.
What makes something good?
When action, activity, thought, mental formations are in harmony with Buddha nature, there will be a kind of equanimity. When Doug here steals something, I feel a vibration in the force. I feel out of that equanimity. When I steal something, I am way out. I am so not there. Whether I feel it as a recognizable object depends on how in touch I am. If I'm really in touch, I'm not going to be doing the stealing. But if I make a mistake and I do something that is really wretched, if I make a really rude remark and hurt somebody's feelings, I'm going to feel that. And I am not going to feel good. So that is, with any luck, that is my way of judging. If I'm really caught up in duality, I need to go back to the precepts. And I need to say, oh, stealing, that was not good. Oh, being rude to people, that was not good. Cutting people down and telling them I'm a great person, that was not good. Okay, back to basics, I can figure this out. And I can start working my way back to something that is reasonable. But if I'm mindful, aware, doing the work that the Buddha suggested of probing the Dharma and looking in the dark places, I'll be able to do that without referring to a list of rules. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Koshin had his hand up a couple of times. Have you given up?
No. He's still out there.
Who's Koshin? What's Koshin?
Oh, God, here we go. So, there have been several instances where my practice around positivity, negativity, has kind of left me a little lonely. Mm-hmm. Because there have been some relationships along the way that have been harder for me to have or navigate or maintain.
Yeah.
Because I've realized or recognized that they're pretty negative.
Yeah.
And the pattern's pretty negative. And my first response when I recognized those things was to judge those people and say, oh my God, I had no idea you were so toxic. God, you just, oh, geez, you know. And then I think, well, I've been your friend for 20 years, and we've had a great time together, so apparently I've been part of this toxic, negative kind of deal, and it's humbling. So in some cases, I've been able to just kind of take a step back and observe and focus on me in that relationship, and in other cases, I've kind of either ended it or minimized my time in it. Mm-hmm. And it can be, you know, when you see those things, it can be a little lonely. Mm-hmm. So, what about it?
It can be lonely.
Yeah.
I agree. So, I would have you look around this room. There are a lot of people in this room who are working on exactly that, on cultivating friendships, acquaintances, companionships that are based on something wholesome. And so, yes, it can be lonely, but you don't have to suffer that loneliness alone. That there is such a thing as a wholesome friendship. And it is possible to have good friends that support that best of you, that Buddha nature that can and will shine through. It is true that the Buddha said to Ananda, when Ananda asked if good friends were important, the Buddha said, good friends are the whole of the way. And it is about this, is the more time you spend with the bad news, the psychopaths, the thieves, the murderers, the pessimists, and the backbiters, the harder it is for you to uncover that light. And so spending more time, and I don't recommend that we put up a barricade and you have to know the secret password to get in. And you have to prove that you're a good enough person to know the secret password. Because I really believe that in the same way that contact with negative people can bring us down, positive contact can bring us up. And so if we as a culture, as a community, cultivate that willingness to support each other in bringing the Buddha nature forth, we can accept a percentage of our community having trouble with that. And we can be an influence on that. I really believe it. And so accepting people who are a little marginal, it's something we do. And you know what? We make a difference.
We do.
We do? I've seen it.
I have.
Yeah. This one behind. So on.
I kind of see a pitfall, though, in looking at Buddha nature.
Just one?
There's many. But in looking at Buddha nature, the potential to look at it as an object, mm-hmm. and to see it as this is the inner light that's shining, as like a meta soul,
mm-hmm.
and rather than a quality or a potentiality.
Yeah,
we could talk about that.
Yeah, we can being human, we can solidify anything, but it's really clear when you study Buddhism. That I said in the beginning that China amalgamated some things and called it Buddha nature. In Pali and Sanskrit, there were all these different qualities that were qualities of Buddha mind, Buddha heart, Buddha activity, and Buddha nature just became a kind of a shorthand for collecting all those things together. And their qualities, their modes of being, that and the brilliance of calling it Buddha nature is to hammer home the point that these modes, these qualities, these aspects are part of you. So this is not about rushing around to get something that you don't already have. This is about sitting down, loosening your robes, quietening the mind, so that that which is there can shine through. And it has many aspects. So the shining has different times and different aspects. But yeah, it's not this little gold Buddha that sits in your belly and sometimes radiates light. Good point.